Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about Offnet, a way that you can have advertising on a Wi-Fi hotspot for your business. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett, episode 459, recorded November 15th, 2017, Offnet. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and not be aware of it, projects you might want to find out a lot more about right after this show. Today is probably one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Randall, good to be here.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
Hey, you got it right this time. I am here in Lawton, Oklahoma, the flyover state, in the corporate headquarters, the home office.
Awesome. You're consistently in the same location every time. It's me that has to actually explain every week where the hell I am. Oh, heck. I didn't say a bad word, did I? Anyway, it'll just be bleeped. This week, I am at ZipRecruiter headquarters, but unlike the other two beautiful rooms that I normally get up on the 11th floor, both of those were busy. So I'm now down here in the dungeon basement. There's no windows in this room except the little window by the door to tell when people are poking in and trying to get access to the room because you're running over your scheduled time. And it's also very bland in here, but for those of you looking at the video, I did dress the set with a little teeny potted plant over there. So that's about all I can find in here, either that or maybe I could have... What, sorry?
Your assignment for next week is to find a little baby Groot and get it dancing during the show.
Well, next week I'll be in the kitchen set, as I like to call it, in my friend's apartment in Tijuana. So we've done a few shows from down there, and I will happen to be there for next week. Actually, it's my birthday, so I'm taking my birthday week in Tijuana for fun because there's fun there. Cool. There's lots of fun there. Yeah, it'll be kind of fun. So this week we have a very unusual show. On a number of different levels. The gentleman we bring on in a moment, Willard Choco, is from Zimbabwe, and he's in Zimbabwe right now. So this is, I think, the longest distance Floss Weekly we've ever had in terms of unless you count Australia. I guess Australia is kind of a long ways the other way. I'd have to actually look it up on the map or the Great Circle distance. But and he wrote me to talk about his project that we're going to be talking about today. Now, Zimbabwe is wired, and a lot of people have portable tablets, cell phones, things like that. But it's a very expensive or sometimes very spotty coverage to be able to access that sort of stuff. So he's come up with a way using open source technologies, which is the reason he's on this show, to create a Wi-Fi hotspot that businesses can place in their business location. And they can provide things like, a locally provided website or maybe even pass it through if they have an internet connection to public data, things like that. But the key is that it doesn't require, a public data, the cell phone usage doesn't require using that because that's generally also pretty slow, apparently. You can get very fast local Wi-Fi to provide information to passersby or to people like sitting in the restaurant or whatever. And I think this is really remarkable. And it's also really remarkable that he didn't start out like a lot of us did of, being a programmer early on or technologist early on. He sort of picked it up a little later in life, not much. He's not that old, but and so I want to have him talk a little bit about that and what that process was like. So it sounds pretty interesting. So I'm really excited to bring him on. I should say that we're taping this on the day when there's a lot of news about Zimbabwe. And when you go back and play this historically, it'll probably be all over and totally irrelevant. But we're crossing our fingers that we won't be hearing any gunfire or explosions nearby today, because he's sort of in the thick of all right there. So anyway, I'm crossing my fingers and also hoping the Skype gods play well with us for the entire show, because this is, like I said, a really long distance Skype call. So Jonathan, what do you know about this so far?
So I did some reading on it, and like you said, there's not a whole lot of technical information, at least, on their website. But I'm super interested as to whether they're using things like OpenWRT, mesh networking, all kinds of questions I want to ask about it.
Awesome.
But I don't know a whole lot about it, so I'm definitely looking forward to diving in with the questions.
Well, I'm glad that's why we have the expert on it coming on in just a moment. But before we do that, I do have an important message to read, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Willard Shoko. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, Randall. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I know you're in Zimbabwe, but are you kind of in the thick of things right now? Are you kind of where all the action is?
No, thank goodness, I'm not where the action is.
Okay, so you're probably reasonably safe this time. Okay, good. Okay, no explosions, no gunshots. So tell us a little bit about what problem this project that you brought to me is called OffNet. What problem is it solving? Did I get it accurate about the kinds of issues we have?
Yes, you got it very accurate of the kind of issues that we have. Like here in Zimbabwe, data is very expensive. So people don't have disposable income of actually getting data. So the whole reason why I brought up OffNet was to kind of assist in that aspect, because not many Zimbabweans have got websites. And the very few that do have websites hardly maintain those websites because of the hosting costs and setting up a domain. So the whole reason why I came up with OffNet is to give them a device that they can have without actually being online, hence the name OffNet.
And so what does this actually entail? Is it an on-premise box that has a Wi-Fi hotspot with it, or how does this work?
Okay, currently we are using MikroTik devices. I don't know if you've actually heard of those.
I haven't. Jonathan, do you know anything about
yes.
that?
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and take brand. The questions in?
Okay. I've seen the MikroTik brand around a bit. How big of a box is this? Is it like a little router, or is it the ones that's basically a converted desktop?
No, it's actually very small, almost the size of a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the size of a Raspberry
Pi. About a Raspberry Pi. And how expensive are those for an individual unit?
Okay, they range from about $50. The ones we use from about $50 to about $175.
Okay, and so what they provide not internet access but local network access. What kind of things do you do with the local network?
Okay, initially, basically, they are routers that actually provide internet service. Inside them, inbuilt, they've got a hotspot system. So they've got a captive portal. So initially, what we used to do is that we used to offer hotspot solutions. But now it turned out that the internet speeds were not so good. So we thought of how else can we use this this project? Because what happens on the captive portal is that there's a login page where a user can log in and put in their username and password. They can put in their credentials, so that after they put in their credentials, they can actually be able to browse the internet. And what happens on that captive portal is that people normally used to put bits of adverts there, and then when people actually went to the captive portal, they could actually see some of those adverts. So we took it a step further to say, you know what, we're going to do away with the internet. We're just going to use this device just as an advertising device. So
Go ahead.
So basically what happens is that I'll give an example. So like, let's say that someone's got a restaurant. What he does is that we load up a page of maybe his menu, and then now when we are now creating the SSID, we call the SSID, let's say for example KFC, it will be KFC menu. So the SSID now sort of like works like the domain. It's very descriptive, so that when someone turns on their device, they kind of see it. And then once they click on a KFC menu, they are redirected to a menu, and they can actually go through that menu, and then they can see what's available.
Is all of the kind of this local website, is all of it hosted on that Microtech device?
Yes, all of it is hosted in that Microtech device, because you can have it both ways. But in this scenario, most individuals don't have internet on premises, so then the whole website can actually be hosted on premise.
Right. So it's not like one of the things I imagined when I thought about this was you would actually have two devices, one being your access point and then another, maybe a literal Raspberry Pi that runs the local website. But you're able to do both of it on the single device.
Yes. The Microtech device has actually got an antenna there, a wireless antenna, depending on the range you want to get. But if you want to get more range, you can actually then plug Ethernet to a stronger antenna, and then you can probably mount it outside if you want to get more coverage.
So have you guys done any work like replacing the firmware on these? I know there's a couple of different projects that are open source firmwares. Is that something you've looked at?
That's something we're going to be actually looking at, because as it is, transferring the data, we're using FTP, but then now we wanted to have some sort of dashboard whereby someone could actually log onto the device, and it would be simple enough for the person to do that on his own. And then the Microtech device allows you to have multiple SSIDs. So, for example, if someone was to get it, you can have an SSID called KFC menu, and then you can maybe have another one that says hardware, and maybe another one that says video filming. So now he can now be sort of like a virtual host. You can host other people so that they can ride on that, sort of like how GoDaddy does it, but at a very small scale. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you guys have like a mesh network, or maybe even wiring multiple of these devices together? Is that something that you've done?
We thought of that. We thought of having mesh networks, but unfortunately, in Zimbabwe, there's laws against mesh networks.
Really? Well, that's
what?
That's surprising.
Yes.
So when you have multiple SSIDs, would it work? Would it be legal then to have, rather than doing it a pure mesh network, could you just have your Wi-Fi card working as a client and a host, so that you get kind of a pseudo mesh, but without using all of the mesh technology?
Well, that as well would probably not be allowed, because like if you've got something like that, they don't actually allow you to have backhauls. Yeah, otherwise you might actually get into trouble.
They don't allow what? What was the term you used?
Backhauls. Backhauling a connection.
Backhauling.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Interesting.
Like for example, like if I've got like an access point here, then I have a station somewhere else, and then that station talks to the access point, and then that station then provides another access point. That's backhauling. That's not allowed.
Interesting. So your hands are kind of tied as far as, you know, how big you can develop this project to be, aren't they?
Yes, but the main focus I was targeting this is just not just for advertising, but maybe for also disseminating information. Like if someone was to have like a small wedding or even a wedding in general, they could actually upload the wedding, the program, how the couples met, and information about that, so that when people actually come to the chapel, they can switch on their phones and actually go through the information.
So, just kind of an estimate to help us understand, like what percentage of the people there are going to have either a cell phone or a tablet or even a laptop, something that can connect to the Wi-Fi? Is that pretty highly saturated there?
Yes, it's actually pretty highly saturated here. Quite a lot of people have actually got smartphones.
And when it's time to update the websites, what's the process for that? Do you have some way that you can do it remotely, or are these things totally offline? Do you have to drive out there to be able to update things? How does that work?
Like with larger organizations. With large organizations, you can just probably log in remotely and then update it. Because the large organizations should be having this device, because sometimes people will not be able to actually access their main website. But that device actually allows them to be able to get their website from within close proximity. So with large organizations, they've got internet connection, you can actually just... you can send it remotely. But in small organizations, we are hoping to have a project whereby maybe we can have some sort of portal whereby people can actually do it on their own.
And so you've been working on this for a while. How long have you been working on this project?
I can say I've been working for it about close to about a year now.
Okay, and how have your design goals changed since you started? I mean, I'm sure you had a basic idea and then you went to implement that and then said, oh, I also need this or that. How has that evolved over that year?
It's actually evolved, because initially I just wanted to just have Wi-Fi access. But then what now changed is that I wanted now to have multiple SSIDs whereby people can now start hosting. When people go to a complex and there's quite a lot of organization, one person can own the device, and then people can start paying him to broadcast the products that he or she offers.
And one of the things I know about content is that it almost immediately goes stale. So things change. Like you were talking about a large chain. A company, which I'm not going to buzz market like you did, but their prices change, or they might have weekly specials or whatever. So, have you seen people keeping the content up to date that have installations of this already?
Yes, because the alternative is actually for someone to print an actual menu, and that doesn't last much. So then this is why the product comes in, because with this product actually changing, it becomes easy. Because if you've got a menu that's on paper, Once something changes, it changes and you have to reprint. So it's also taking that away so that people don't have to actually use more paper. You just have that device and then that device just beams. So changing it is actually quicker than the traditional methods.
And what level of intelligence does a person need? What kind of experience does a person need, skill set, to be able to create the menu and keep it up to date? And maybe that's two different levels of skill, but... What are they interfacing with? Are they making HTML? Are they just putting text in a file? What?
This was actually the whole goal of this project, to say that in Zimbabwe, like creating a full featured website is something that's actually quite huge. So this was actually supposed to be like a step, because initially maybe they'll just be creating menus, which will be just HTML, or maybe even just an image that they can just upload. So then this can now be a stepping stone to then creating larger websites. So they can just, so it'll be just basic HTML. So at least they'll be having something that they'll be working towards actually creating a website.
Cool. Does it support, well, let's see, I guess it's, if you had JavaScript in there, it would just pass the JavaScript out to the browser. So I imagine you could have interactive menus or things like that, right?
Yes, because now what happens with the device is that mostly I just use it for the hotspot services. But then now you can then connect, it's got 5 Ethernet ports. You can connect it to a to another computer, like maybe a Pentium 2 or Pentium 3, which is running WordPress. And then maybe you can now do the fancy stuff on WordPress or Joomla there. And then this device now just acts as an interface to then pass through to the actual WordPress or Joomla site, which is more interactive.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So basically you're building up the just basically a web hotspot with an actual computer back end. And that opens up all sorts of possibilities. So obviously somebody on premises has to be someone who's familiar with HTML. Is that hard to find in Zimbabwe, or is that something that quite a few people know how to do?
Okay. Now there's like CMSs that are actually quite easy to use. So then, depending how urgent the person wants it, like if it's just once off, we just go there and do it. Like for example, weddings or a funeral. When you're doing someone's obituary, it's usually something that's once off. You can just do it for them. And then now with these devices, they're also, you can power them using a power bank or solar. So when someone's got a funeral, you can actually take that device and maybe take it to where they're going to lay the person to rest, and people can actually go through and then see it. And then now with people who want to actually have it for maybe much longer, that's when maybe you can have some sort of training and maybe introduce them to like maybe some CMS that they can then use. So we have one at our church. So the challenge that we have at church is that some of the files that we have, they're actually quite huge, like the videos that we have. You might get videos that maybe are 1 gig or 2 gig. So for the average person to download that from the internet, it's very expensive in terms of data. Because on data, you're looking at about, it's about 10 cents a meg.
Oh.
That's 10 US cents a meg. So it becomes really expensive. And to kind of give you like maybe an idea how expensive the internet is, the site across the road, we've got a client. He pays 13,000 a month for 80 megs.
Oh, I could never live in a country like that. That would be impossible. I'd go through $13,000 in just loading up my morning website. It'd be horrible. I could see why providing these hotspots is definitely so. You know, but you just brought up a couple things. So let me make sure I got both of these out of this part of the conversation. So you mentioned CMS. Are you running some sort of CMS then actually on the device?
That's where I would actually love to actually take it. So like you get CMSs like WordPress or I'm not sure if you guys are familiar to Joomla or even Wix. So basically what I'll probably love is like maybe if I don't know if I could maybe go into partnership with Wix, then they actually have this whereby people could actually design a website, and this can be a gadget whereby if someone wants to publish a website and it's just local, because most of the time when someone publishes a website, it's either he has to like maybe show the website on to usually call someone and then says, hey, just have a look at this website. But if they could have it beaming Wi-Fi, I think it could be just a new market.
That's awesome. And so now the other question I had that was resulting from that, because you mentioned a 1 meg video on a church hotspot. How much space do these devices have?
Well, I think it was 1 gig. Those devices have got the entry level has got 16 meg. Then the others have got 128 meg. But then what they do have is that they've got Ethernet ports, like they've got 5 Ethernet ports. So then you can have your CMS, which can be like terabytes. You can have that information there. And then now this device is just acting just like the hotspot to just maybe just work as the logic. So you could actually have, you could have a switch and have more machines there. And then it's just working as the logic to actually point it to servers with more storage.
Is there also a way to attach a USB drive to this and serve data from there?
Yes, there is a USB drive.
Okay, so I could just put a 3 terabyte drive, sit it right next to my hotspot, and that could be my entire thing without introducing another computer where the storage would be.
Yes, because I had someone who came up to me, and then he wanted to have something similar to Netflix, whereby people could actually come close enough to his place, and then they'll download stuff, then they go home. Like sort of like video rental, but then they'll be able to download it, because it would be quite expensive to actually get it from Netflix.
That's not video rental, that's video theft. let's call it what it is.
we're in Zimbabwe, so it doesn't count.
It's a different world. Hey, yeah. I wanted to chat with you a bit. I've done not exactly this. Obviously, this is a very interesting project, what you're trying to accomplish, but I've done some interesting things, and I wanted to kind of tell you that the direction that I would go with this is I would look at maybe even cheaper hardware than what you've got that you can support OpenWRT. So there's a company called GLI.net, something like that, and they have these little, they're like access points for like 25 or 30 bucks is what I can get them for off of Amazon. But they've got the USB port on them, so you can take, you know, whatever size USB key or hard drive you want and punch into it, and so you have unlimited storage. And because it's OpenWRT, which is, you know, a little Linux distribution, you can run pretty much anything you want to on there. In fact, you know, there's some guides on how to get your different CMSs running directly on that little piece of hardware. So that might be a direction to go. So one of the things I know about the MikroTik devices is they are really, really difficult actually to try to replace the firmware. I know OpenWRT's tried to support it, but there's just some challenges there. Have you started looking? Do you have an idea about maybe what a different direction you want to go for hardware or software? Do you have any plans laid out so far?
Another option to go for was the Raspberry Pis, but then I think probably the option you're talking about probably would be something worth looking into.
Yeah, we may have to chat a little bit further once we get done with the show. Now let me ask you this: what is the availability of hardware there? So if you were to go with Raspberry Pis, which is also a great piece of hardware, how difficult would it be to actually get them in Zimbabwe?
Probably you might just have to export them. I think I probably might actually have to export them because the availability of them now that things are a bit over the past couple of months, things have been changing. So yeah, you might actually have to export them from now. Maybe get them from China or something.
So is it a deal where do you have a shipping company? Can you just write the company in China and say, hey, send them to us, and they'll come in the mail? Or do you have to have someone, you know, fly on a plane there and fill a suitcase up and bring them back?
Well, it depends. It depends on how many you get, because you can just go down South Africa, because South Africa usually has this hardware. But then if you do get something... if you do get something bigger, then probably you can just probably go to China and get much more of that equipment.
Interesting. So we had someone from the chat room asking a question. Let me see if I can find it. Wants to know, and I assume this is talking again about the off-net, do you keep data that passes through this network? Does it work like a proxy? And I guess I'll expand on that a little bit. Do you keep any kind of, I guess we could call it analytics, to have an idea about how many people are visiting these little web pages?
Yes. Initially when you start the product, we just used to maybe look at the leases, the DHCP leases. But then probably we'll be looking into more better analytics on those devices, because that would actually really help to kind of see how many people actually look at that device. And probably that will then help in assisting whether someone should actually open a bigger web page.
So we chatted a little bit about backhauling and the whole mesh network and how you have some legal problems with that. Have you run into any other legal problems where, you know, maybe someone has content on one of these devices that is not considered acceptable by the government? Is that a problem you run into?
No, I haven't actually run into that problem. The biggest problem we have is just the backhauling problem.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Sounds like, I don't know if you guys are big enough to do this, but, you know, in other countries, we would start a petition or, you know, pay lobbyists to go and try to get the laws changed. Have you looked into that? So starting to talk to politicians about this?
No, we just talk about it, but then we actually haven't gone to have any petitions about it.
Well, sounds like we've got some homework to do, right? So Floss Weekly, all about open source, and we've talked a lot about what you guys are doing, but what we haven't talked about is how this ties into open source software. Is there actually a software project that this is built around? You know, do you guys have a GitHub page with a project on it? What's the relationship there?
We don't actually have a GitHub page. We just have some. We do have some code, because the only code that we had was just on manipulating the captive portal. But we don't have anything yet on GitHub.
Okay, where is that hosted at? If some of us wanted to go take a look at it, or even try to use it or make changes to it, is that available somewhere?
Currently, it was still offline. We're just still working on it, and then as soon as we get it, we'll just probably publish it.
Okay. Hey, I wanted to ask: is there anything, any other projects that you personally or your company work on? Any other open source projects that you're proud about?
Okay. I enjoy using Perl. That's how I actually got to know of this show. I was reading a book called Learning Perl, which was also written by Randall Schwartz. And then for me to actually know this program, I went to YouTube and then I typed in Randall Schwartz. And then the first show I got was Learning Perl, which he did a show some time back on Learning Perl, which was similar to the book. And then after that, I kept looking some more on YouTube. That's how I actually found the Floss Weekly show. And then so in our organization, we do use Perl quite a lot. And then we also supply voice over IP services. And where we actually got to use some of the code was that normally we are trying to offer some scripts that then talk with VoIP equipment, with DAO plans. For example, we had this one client, every time he'll always have to go to the web page to check what his balance was for their VoIP bill. So he'll go to their portal, log in, and then get his balance. But then it became a tedious process, because he always had to do it every day. So what we did is that we created a script that goes and automatically logs onto the site, grabs that data, and all this was tied to a DAO plan. So, for example, if they picked up the phone, they typed maybe 123, they'd actually get the balance back.
Do you use Asterisk on the back end to make all of that work?
Yes, we use Asterisk, and then we use Perl for the DAO plans.
Aha! Yeah, so for anyone that's not familiar with what we're talking about, Asterisk is probably the big open source VoIP program, and I've used it quite a bit. You can build phone systems with it. Apparently, it sounds like you can build a full telephone interconnect, as it sounds like they've done there in Zimbabwe. So that's very interesting. It's fascinating to see, you know, these projects that, you know, I'm aware of getting used by other people out in the real world. Is there any other open source projects that you guys use internally that we might be interested to hear about?
We also use Nagios for monitoring devices. And Nagios is just a network monitoring devices. So basically, when a node goes down, you get an email alert to tell you that it's down. But then we took it a step further, and then we integrated it with the Telegram API. So basically what happens is that when a node goes down, you get a Telegram message. So what we did is that we created a Telegram bot that then sends you this information to tell you that it's down. So it actually sends you a picture of the actual, like let's say maybe one of our VoIP phones goes down, it'll send you a picture of the actual phone, and then gives you details to say that this phone is down. So the beauty of having images is that if you were to get like maybe 30 or 40 images, you can just scroll through the images quickly to kind of see what problems you're having. Because initially we used to send texts, so then going through each and every text was a bit of a problem. And then later on, we integrated the bot into a group chat. So for example, if a node went down, the bot would actually send a similar message in a group chat. So then like all our techs who are in the group chat can actually see that, and then they can start replying and then maybe send a smiley when everything is done.
We had a show about, I guess like 2 years ago now, on Ichinga, which is Ichinga, I guess, something like that, which is the fork of Nagios and has had a lot more expansive development done on it. And it's also backward compatible with existing Nagios configurations. You might want to look at upgrading to Ichinga because the Ichinga people had quite a bit to say about how non-cooperative Nagios people have been, and I'm probably getting in trouble for saying that, but I think they said that in the show, so I'm just quoting them. I'd really suggest you look at that. So please take a look at that. And yes, I'm honored that you read my book and you looked for you found Floss Weekly was a result of that. So that's a really cool story of getting to get together to be on this show today. I'm actually curious, what's because you talked about data being expensive and things like that. What is the actual state of the internet in Zimbabwe?
It's the state of the internet has actually been improving. It's been improving quite a bit, but the problem is that the internet coverage is not. It's still not as much, because there's still quite a lot of places that don't have internet. So then, if you thought that was expensive, that's actually not so bad, because that's a fiber connection. When you now go to sites where there's VSAT connections, it gets even much more expensive. Because we wanted 10 meg from a certain company, and they charged us 40 grand.
Oh.
A month.
Well, wait, you're the ISP, right? Or are you talking about buying the what you have to pay a government entity to be able to buy that bandwidth?
Yes, the biggest challenge like with ISPs is that we are a small ISP, so then we are not like at the top tier. And the reason why is that like for example, for you to be an IAP, that's an internet access provider, you have to pay quite a large sum for you to be an IAP. So we are just a small player, so we just get bandwidth from those guys, then we supply our internet services. So that's why we actually ended up having to then branch off to things like Offnet, and then offering VoIP and other branches. We still do VoIP. We still do work as an ISP, but then not as much.
Well, let me think about this then, since you're obviously a consumer at that level before you turn around and then resell it. Are you paying by the megabyte for this Skype call?
No, thankfully not. Thankfully not.
This would have been one of the most expensive shows we've ever done.
It's going to be over in like 10 minutes.
We would have made it an audio call if that had been the case. So I'm glad you're not doing this at home. That would have been extremely expensive for you. So you got into technology late. What did you do? What did you think you were going to be doing before technology?
I went through quite a lot of things. I used to stay next to a golf course. So then I wanted to be a professional golfer, but then that didn't turn out too well.
Probably skill levels, huh?
No. I did get a scholarship, but I couldn't afford it.
Okay, and so what brought you into technology?
I always used to love technology. I had a fascination of technology, but then I wasn't pretty good at technology, because I remember at the school I was at, I didn't have access to a computer then. So the other guys used to have access to computers. And then what I can say that is like I couldn't progress because of those things. But I did really like IT. But then and then later on when I was able to actually get a desktop, I was actually able to move quite quickly then.
And so at what age are kids typically exposed to computers in school, if at all?
Okay, now things have changed. Now they actually get it. Now they actually get exposed even like at the first grade, second grade. But at that time, yeah, computers were for like maybe the very rich.
Yeah, that was probably, what, 20 years ago or so?
Yeah, probably about 20 years back there, yeah.
Okay, so are you familiar with the programs that kids are actually getting to use in school at the first grade level?
The curriculum has just changed. The curriculum changed now, and then I think they've got HTML now in the new curriculum, but I still have to go through the new curriculum.
Wow. And go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and say kids there are getting better educated in technology than kids here are. We're still fighting to try to get some HTML and different programming classes in school still. You guys are,
yeah.
You know, seriously though, you guys give it 20 or 30 years and you do some of those things and it's going to make a huge difference. You guys are going to be on top of the game instead of way behind.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Do you find a male-female disparity in technology there, like seems to be prevalent around much of the world?
Definitely. Not many females actually go into technology. Very few, actually.
Yeah, we've got to figure out some way to solve that. That's I know there's lots of different stabs at it. In fact, next week's program is about JoulBots, which is an Arduino that can be programmed, and they're actually getting teen and preteen girls programmed with this friendship bracelet that glows different colors and gives a push button and buzzes and things like that. So you can have two bracelets when they find that they're near each other, both change to the same color, so you know your friend is around. And they're actually getting preteen girls programming in C++. I'm going, wow, that's insane. But yeah, so
that's definitely insane.
I am looking forward to that show. That's next week. But I jump ahead of myself here. So I want to make sure we've hit most of the things that you wanted me to talk about. So what do you think can be done to improve technology in Africa and Zimbabwe?
Probably make the price of internet cheap. I think probably that would actually help, as more people will be able to actually be able to use the internet and get resources, because also now that there's actually some good courses that are out there, like for example you have your Treehouse and your Udemy, which are very good courses. So I think if the price of data is lowered, I think people can actually start doing those courses. And also if there's more if you could have more of like the internet around the country, I think it would actually help. And also if the price of internet was cheaper for internal traffic, so maybe let's say maybe someone's got a meg download, if they could maybe give him like the 100 meg or 500 meg peer-to-peer per second, as long as it's within the country, I think that can also help, because probably projects will come up there, people might end up having their own Dropboxes or things like that.
Cool. And so what is a typical fast connection? You mentioned fiber. Is that so? Have you got fiber almost everywhere? Can people buy fiber to their home?
Yes, people can buy fiber to their home, but then it's at a very, very slow. It's a very slow pace because the fiber is not as extensible yet. So most people here actually use they use copper wire, they use ADSL, or they use UHF. I don't know if you guys use that.
Okay. What about local satellite? I mean, like dish technology. Is there any use of that to get to people that aren't right next to a road or something?
Yes. There's VSAT.
Okay, cool, cool. And I want to make sure we cover everything else. I understand you're passionate about litter. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay. Well, I also believe that, it doesn't take much to make a difference. So what I've been doing now is that every day I pick up a piece of litter, take a picture, and then put it in the bin. So instead of taking selfies, I take selfies, putting a litter in the bin. So to date, I'm on day 246.
Cool, cool. And we have a question from the chat room. Emily Strange, a frequenter of our chat room, says, do you believe in the net neutrality way of thinking? Like, should the internet be viewed as a basic utility?
Yes, of course. It should be a basic commodity. Definitely. I believe it should be.
And I agree with you there because it's clear. Go ahead, sorry.
I think everyone should have access to the internet because, like, in our country, like as it is, there's a problem of there's a shortage of money.
Okay.
There's like a shortage of our own local currency, and we were using US dollars, and then there's also been like a shortage of US dollars as well. So now there's not like a lot of paperless money. So now, in order to actually do those transfers, you actually have to have some sort of connection. So I think it kind of helps in cases and scenarios like that.
I can tell you, you're not the only country that has a shortage of U.S. dollars. I can think of the one I'm in right now, shortage of U.S. dollars. Anyway, well, not for the 1%. The 1% have it.
It's a bit serious to say.
Yeah, I'm not in the 1%.
Lots of money.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to go that way. We're almost out of time. I know we've covered a lot of subjects. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to make sure you get to talk about before we have to let you go?
I think you've covered everything. But probably maybe the last thing I'd like to do is that I'd really like to thank you, Randall, for having me here. You know, it's such an honor and a privilege to actually talk to the author of Learning Power, and also to Jonathan, thank you so much for having me here, because it's not every day where people have opportunities to talk about projects or to express their views. Thank you so much for having faith in me to come onto your show. Thank you so much, Randall.
Awesome. Well, I have two more questions. I think I know the answers to at least one of the two. That's almost a given at this point, but I have to ask it or my audience goes crazy. What's your favorite scripting language?
That's a hard one. Yeah, it'll have to be Paul.
Okay, good. All right. Got one. One of my column. Okay. Now, this one I may not get. What's your favorite text editor?
Sorry, Randall. Vim.
No, well, at least one out of two. That's better than the zero out of two that I get most of the time. So that's really awesome. Well, Willard, it's been wonderful chatting with you. I'm glad there weren't any explosions or gunshots nearby so we could continue to the end of the show. And good luck with all that. There's people all around the world paying attention to it every hour. So we'll hope this all kind of comes down to a peaceful transition of power and things don't get a little too weird like they have in some other countries that have tried something like this. And I love your enthusiasm. I appreciate what you're trying to do here, and more power to you. And if there's anything we can do to help you out, like especially Jonathan seems to have a lot of information about hotspots, so feel free to keep his email address around, and I'm sure he's willing to continue a dialogue with you. And just thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, actually there is something I'd like you to help me with. There's a project I'm doing, a power project that I'm doing. Maybe I can
Feel free. Feel free. Actually, the easiest way is to put it on Stack Overflow, and that way, if I see it, I'll answer it. But if other people, other people can get to it before I do, that's really awesome. So, but if it's something more about context than about individual questions, then feel free to write me. Yes, my email address is right there, not at the bottom of the screen, but on some part of some screen. Not there.
Yes, and also interesting enough, Zimbabwe stands for House of Stone, which is also Stonehenge.
Oh, nice! There's a tie-in I hadn't expected today. I learned something new every day on this show. That is so cool. Willard, thank you once again.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Great, great. That was Willard Shoko with a really interesting story and a good project and a lot of other interesting projects. Good guy. Good guy overall. What do you think there, Jonathan?
I think it's interesting. It's not so much a single open source project like we normally talk about. You know, there's no GitHub repository to go and look at, but it's more a story about how some open source technology is helping some people try to develop their infrastructure, which is neat. I think we need this kind of almost an introspective from time to time. It's kind of a reminder of why we do some of the things that we do. And I will just add, Willard, I will need to chat with you afterwards to give you some more information about some of this. So you can hit me up either at my Twitter handle. Let's see, where is it? Over here, JP_Bennett on Twitter, or you can email me, jbennett@cypherdyne.com is one of the easiest places to get a hold of me. But yeah, super interesting. Very much enjoyed doing the show.
Very cool. Yeah, and I think it's something we forget sometimes in the open source community, that we're always, you know, we're talking to people all the time on this show about how to monetize the open source they're creating, how to create larger communities and stuff. And of course, it's the old, picnic strategy, where if everybody brings one dish, then we have the combined efforts of everyone and have a complete meal. But we also forget that part of the two freedoms of open source software, one is that it's free to, you know, manipulate and examine and redistribute, things like that. The four freedoms. Now I'm going to get two freedoms and four freedoms confused, but there's two kinds of free. That's what I was trying to get to. So there's two kinds of free. There's the freedom to do the four freedoms, but there's also the fact that pretty much most open source software, if not all of it, is downloadable. So you can build on it. You can build a custom application, a custom development, and you can stand on the shoulders of giants and do amazing projects like this that are providing a very important technology for, imagine if all the web servers in the world were locked up or commercial only, or if all the if all these micro devices were not programmable, we wouldn't have this kind of a project, this kind of a solution. And I think sometimes people in open source are so bent on the fact that it's, that we have to figure out how to commercialize this, and we have to figure out how to, or is it just a labor of love project, that kind of thing. So I think it's important to have shows like this to talk about how we really are impacting the world in a way that we don't always understand by publishing our works. And so that's good. That's probably as much as I wanted to say on that. Anything else, Jonathan, before I go down the upcomings?
No, go right ahead.
All right, here we go. So coming up next week, as I mentioned in the show, we've got JoulBots. I saw this woman whose name is not in front of me, darn it. Actually, it's on the big spreadsheet at allthingsopen.org. And what the project is, it was founded by a Kickstarter of all things, is it's a friendship bracelet that has four infinite color LEDs on it and a buzzer and a button that can be detected. And it's basically a tiny Arduino. And so you program it with C++. And the whole concept about this was to try to create a project that would bring in, what's the proper word for it these days? Men versus women, I guess, is all I can say. I don't know whether it's the G word or the S word down, what that all means. But anyway, to balance it out so that more women get interested in STEM. And so friendship bracelets came out as a very obvious project to do. These things are completely programmable. They have near-field detection. Not near-field. They have low-power Bluetooth. So they can tell the other units that are nearby. And so these girls have programmed in all sorts of activities and behaviors. They develop secret codes, like if I tap this twice, your device will light up red, letting you know that I'm over at the water cooler or whatever the equivalent is, a snack stand, I guess, in school. I don't know. I haven't been in a grade school in years, so I don't know anything about this anymore. Junior high, I guess, too. So anyway, really great response. They're selling like hotcakes. And it's getting, like I said, teen and preteen girls to program in C++. They're for boys too. It's not just for girls, but girls seem to be the most attracted to this thing. So she's on next week. That's going to be a great show. It's also my birthday, so it's my birthday show. I think it's the first time I've ever done the show on my birthday. So And I will, in fact, be in Tijuana next week. Aaron Newcomb is going to join us on that. I'm glad he stepped forward because he knows a lot more about maker stuff than I do. So he'll have a lot of great questions, I'm sure. Coming up with that, Dell has got a lot of support for some open source code projects with their fancy moniker, Open Curly Brace Code, Close Curly Brace, which is impossible to Google for. Why do people pick project names that you can't Google for? Like the whole C-sharp thing. What an idiot. Whoever came up with that, that was wrong. Anyway, I'm ranting.
Alternatively, Google needs to support escape code sequences so you can do / curly brace code / close curly brace. That'd be the other way to fix that, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I tell you, people come up with things you can't Google. That's why I'm glad Perl doesn't have the A in it. And actually, Larry thought of that when he was building it. So, yeah. Suze, we've had people from Suze on the show before, but talking about other related projects. We're actually going to talk about Suze itself, probably one of the most well-known distributions for Linux. And one of the ones that's been around, I think, for almost the longest. So I'm not a Linux guy, so I don't know. Following that, Linkerd, which is a transparent proxy that adds service discovery, routing, failure handling, and stuff designed for containers. Just added between last week and this week. I'm so happy that we can add two when we throw away one. So it's like I'm actually making progress again. And this is because we just opened up Q1. So we've got the first two shows of Q1 already booked. I am so happy about the first show of the year. I saw John O'Bacon. John O'Bacon's a longtime friend of the show, was a co-host for, I think, about a year, but has been busy with other interesting projects. One of the things he's become rather famous for is his, in 2009, he wrote this book called The Art of Community, because he'd been the community coordinator for Canonical, which makes Ubuntu, for many years. And so he wrote this book that's become the seminal book for this stuff. And in fact, entire sub-conferences have grown up around the teachings and principles of Art of Community. But things have changed over the last 8 years. And so I saw him give a keynote talk at All Things Open and said, you know, Jono, you might want to come back on the show and talk about what you've seen that's different in community over the 8 years. What are the new struggles? How have the old struggles gone away? What really worked to make that happen? So it's going to be a full show about community relations, being a community coordinator, all sorts of wonderful stuff. So basically the entire day seminar concentrated to an hour. It's going to be a very dense show. Not, I don't mean dense like dumb, but I'm dense like it's lots of stuff in it. Okay, that'll be cool. And also just added to the list the following week is the Open Mainframe project. I didn't even know this existed. But apparently almost all the mainframes out there are running Linux now. And so this project is trying to bring together all the various concerns and factions under one umbrella to talk about how to run open source software of all kinds on your mainframe. So for the two of you out there, I think you'll probably want to tune into that show and pay attention. But the rest of you are probably just going to find it fascinating, but have absolutely no practical use for anything they'll say. So that'll be fun. Oh, somebody in the chat room is actually saying the 500 supercomputers. Okay, that's fine. I guess they are called mainframes too. Yeah, they're running Linux and everything too. So for those of you that get access to a supercomputer, you'll also want to be on that show. That'll be fun. Okay, if you have any those names are all on the big spreadsheet linked to twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for this show. If you have any other suggestions, again, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is on that page. You don't have to write it down. Again, we just opened up Q1. We've got many empty slots to fill. Well, we've got 11 more to fill now. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, Wednesdays, at live.twit.tv. We take questions from there. We took a number of questions from there. There's a chat room there. We also you want to follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus, where I now am finally using it again. So you actually get notices there. I gave it up for about 3 months. I didn't realize I wasn't posting anything. And I went, why am I not posting anything there? And, oh, yes, I guess I'm not posting anything there. So now on my tickler for every week, I say, post the messages to G+. All right. And that also tweets over to @FlossWeekly. So you can just follow us there if you don't even want to get anywhere near Google Plus. I don't blame you. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus, and that tweets over to @Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I have been instructed by the Home Office to read the following paragraph. Well, you don't have to read it literally, but I want you all to know about this. So we're putting together our best of episodes for this year that's going to air between Christmas and New Year's. So what are your favorite segments, shows, or moments on TWiT this year? Not just Floss Weekly, but maybe other shows. We are putting together our best of episodes and want your help. So here's where you go. Head over to twit.tv/bestof. B-E-S-T-O-F, all one word. And fill out the form with whatever information you remember. You don't have to know the episode number. You just say that one where Randall talked to the guy from Zimbabwe, and they'll figure it out because you got smart people. Top men are working at the studio. And so they'll figure it out. Fill out the form with whatever information you remember and be part of making these special shows that will air the week between Christmas and New Year's. So please do that. That's twit.tv/bestof. So please do that. Jonathan, you want to plug?
I do want to plug something if I can. So
sure.
for all five people that haven't shut the podcast off by now, as you may know, one of the projects that I'm involved in is FWNOP, and it's single packet authorization. It's the whole smart firewall that you can send a secure packet and be able to then transverse through the firewall and connect to something. And we are beginning to play with the idea of a SaaS, software as a service offering. And so if anyone out there is interested in the idea of being able to protect maybe legacy hardware, be able to do some monitoring on top of it, if you would get a hold of me and let me know that you might be interested in that. We are, again, we're starting to think about this, and getting funding is a whole lot easier if you know that you have some people that are interested already. So either hit me up on Twitter, it's JP_Bennett, or you can send me an email, jbennett@cypherdyne.com, and let me know about that if you would.
Awesome, Jonathan, and welcome to the show. Oh, God. I did that once before. I have no idea why I do it that way. Thank you once again for being my co-host on this show, and you're welcome back anytime. Maybe that's what I was trying to say.
Oh, I'm sure I'll be back.
I'm sure you will. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.